radical idea. We'll cross the streams.
Excuse me, Egon. You said crossing the streams was bad.
Cross the streams.
Hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Crossing Streams, your television streaming podcast out of San Diego, California. Craig Elston back with you for episode 196, which is coming a week later than we anticipated. And normally I'd say I apologize for the delay. In this case, extraordinary circumstances intervened. My mother passed last week at the age of 81. Her name was Bonnie. She is well remembered. Her favorite TV shows always seem to be canceled. I remember her liking shows like Life Goes On, anything that was like a sappy, sentimental, hour-long Sunday drama on ABC or CBS, those things that would last one season and get canceled. So as a result, I had to take the week, had to go. But we are here now. We apologize for the delay in that sense. And, I have been waiting to talk. Industry, it's time! Rebecca Gennaro is back. We are talking about the show that should be your new addiction, Industry Season 2. Rebecca, welcome back to Crossing Streams.
Thank you for having me. I am delighted to be here tonight talking about an amazing, amazing piece of television.
I'm going crazy for this show, Rebecca. I mean, we both liked Industry season one. Came in hard and late at the end of 2020. November, December show. And we're like, wow, I think it got into the teens in my rankings for 2020, which was a great year of television. But holy cow, as we just talk about, and we are going to discuss and react to all six episodes of eight so far for season two. So we're spoiling 75% of it. So be aware, but we're starting generally and we're drifting in, but I can't believe the leap this show has taken, Rebecca.
It's so much better in season two. It's everything I liked about season one. It's character development a little bit, but not too much, because I feel like too much character development would almost lose some of the charm of the show. It's less sex and drugs, which was like really my only big criticism of season one. It's like, can we have a little more character and a little less sex and drugs? But it's like, still a lot of that, but it's a little more of just, looking at what are the actual challenges that these young people face trying to make a career in the world. And I still love that it's really told from the viewpoint largely of two young women, because that's a career path that I, as a young woman, have taken and I think succeeded largely so far in my career. And so it's just a very interesting perspective on young women making it in a world that is sometimes complicated, always still male dominated, especially in this particular industry, for lack of a, less cliche way to put it.
And as we, season one gave us the big propulsive device, right? Of the paper chase style. This is your first year. Half of you will be gone. Half of you will get a career. So you always knew you were driving to the final adjudication at the end of the season. It was a very first season type setup. Like, if this is all we have, we've got this thing. And I love that when given the opportunity to broaden the canvas and to open things up, what we've seen is not only the progression of what's happening at Pierpoint, but we're seeing the progression of the discussion of class. We're seeing also all of that sex and drugs and frivolity in season one, leaning toward consequence.
Yes.
And all the things that happen when you behave this way, and reflected, of course, not just in Harper, but in Yasmin especially, in Rob, and all the characters we'll get into down the road. But that sprinkle of it's not just going to be a fun ride. You know, there's a consequence or two if you're smoking crystal and ignoring your billionaire's phone calls.
I mean, I'm not going to say I've been there because I legit have not been there. But I mean, I do know what it's like to be, you know, sleep deprived and having to get up at like 6 a.m. to talk to a billionaire because legit, that's my job. So, but no, it's funny. I've been struggling as I've been watching this season. I've been actually struggling to think of a comp for this show among shows that I've enjoyed in the history of my own television watching. And I've gone here and there, and the best one I've actually come up with is Mad Men, which I think is a really interesting comp for this show because it was Mad Men, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong and maybe I'm forgetting something, but it was really kind of the beginning of what you want to call like prestige TV, which was, you know, telling a story about an era or about a thing in a really interesting and luscious way. And like, I'm borrowing some of this from a Vanity Fair article I read about this season, but it's just really like everything about the show is so opulent and interesting. And you're just like, one of the reasons you really want to watch has almost nothing to do with characters, but just with the music and the scenery and the cinematography. Yes. and everything like that. So it's a really interesting, just from a lot of different perspectives. And I do keep going back to that Mad Men comp of just like women and class and a time and a place that is opulent and interesting in so many different levels. So,
yeah, and a workplace as well. And a workplace that involves stress and that, yes, you know, has that temporal nature to it where things are moving and it's not, you know, everything isn't chill. Things can go wrong.
Yep. You know, wealthy and clients.
Right. And you know, I too have been looking for those comps, because I'll just say, for example, I've still got a long-standing group chat with all of the co-hosts of Full Effing Beast, our spin-off Succession Crossing Streams Good review podcast,
yeah,
right, which we, you know, we dove in and said we got to be there every week. And one of the things I've thought about industry has been like, God, I wish I was in there every week with my rotten cabal, you know, like I wish we had a gang and we got together every Monday night or Tuesday and we're just like, let's talk industry, because it's at that level now. It's at that,
yes,
level of I anticipate the show before it comes on Monday. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh man, you know, yeah, we're gonna record a podcast, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that, and industry before the night's over, I can watch industry. And the music, the right, it's like, it's propulsive, it's ebullient, it's just, it's got that feel to it that gives you almost an 80s vibe just from the techno side of it. But then you've got all of the depth of relationship, and that is what brings, it's not funny like Succession, but there is humor and there is, you know, a savagery to, yes, to industry that just, it's, I love it.
Well, and much like Succession, which is another interesting comparison on a lot of different levels, it's just like characters that, like, I don't know if there's any particular character I actually root for in this show.
Right.
But I have interesting thoughts on them all. Like, I like them all for different reasons. I hate them all for different reasons. From episode to episode, there are people who I am like, yes, this person, like, yes, do this thing. Or oh, no, you shouldn't be doing that. Or like, man, why are you fucking this up so bad? Like, it's, you know, but from episode to episode, it's different. I like someone, I don't like someone, I'm rooting for them, or maybe I'm not. And it's very interesting and very Succession-like in that way.
Yes, exactly. Where you do, hey, this is our Shiv segment. Hey, you know, this is our Greg and Tom segment. I mean, that was like literally what we were doing with that show. And here, my menu, as you know, which I said to you, is like pretty much just broken down to, let's talk about Harper, let's talk about Yasmin, let's talk about Eric. And for me so far, while season one was unequivocally Harper and Eric, right? Like, that was their show and everyone else were secondary characters in it. Yasmin to me has been this season's character with so much happening, with her at many times careening out of control and wanting to feel in control of her life and yet wanting to surrender that control to someone else. Now, by episode six, her new boss, as she's transitioned off of the floor into private wealth management. But earlier it was her dad and trying to make him again her financial sucker. And it's like, she doesn't know what she wants. And I've found that kind of uncertain portrayal to have been really affecting and powerful so far. Because again, she's not, to your point, she's not really a likable character. In many ways, she's a very dislikable character.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I actually really relate to her, not from the, you know, like I didn't grow up in a wealthy family perspective, but as someone who was the older child in my family, who was kind of the stereotypical, you know, first child, you know, successful, you know, leading by example, and really sometimes trying to find your way. Because I did go through a career transition. I do work in private wealth management now, which is a, just a funny side story to my enjoyment of this show, but just really needing to find that validation in mentors and father figures in your life, because you're not ever totally sure that you're doing it the right way, because you're the one who has to blaze the trail. And it's just really interesting to watch her go through this and try to find, as I did at certain points in my career, people who could guide me. And in some cases, it wasn't the right fit. And so you're sometimes finding these people who are like turning to them for advice, you know, like her father, who she's kind of turning to for validation and advice and wanting to be that perfect father figure in her life, even though he's far from that. And just kind of going back to find that validation in different places, you know, new bosses and new experiences. It's all part of exploring a career path as a young person, too. And I think that's something a lot of us can relate to in general.
So season two takes place 2 years out of the finale of season one, a tidy time jump that allows no one to age too terribly, but for everybody to have settled into their, you know, their various circumstances at Pierpoint. And for the second season, you've always got to have that new animating figure. And it is Mr. COVID. as they've described him, Jesse Bloom, a billionaire who's made all his money by shorting and by buying the right stocks to take advantage of the pandemic, played by Jay Duplass. And, you know, again, to be a little bit gushy, but he is one of my favorite kind of below the radar, not the leading man actors working. Of course, he and Mark and everything they do with documentaries, and they're absolutely brilliant, both in front of and behind the camera. But he's really coming out as an actor. And I think he was like, and I'll be using this for some other people as well, but I think for one of the new characters, perfectly cast, for slightly enigmatic. You could believe him as being that kind of guy and very multifaceted in what he's revealing. And you still don't really know where he stands.
And it's interesting. So I do a lot of watching TV while I'm scrolling through my phone, as a lot of people do. And there are some shows where it's actually hard to do that. And this is one of them. But one of the things that I love about Jesse Bloom as a character is that it's really hard to take your eyes away from the screen when he's on it. He's just that compelling of a character. He is kind of larger than life. He's that guy who comes in and is just like, yeah, like I'm a billionaire. What do you want to do about it? And impress me. And there are those people in this world, you know, just speaking from personal experience, there aren't actually a ton of them, but there are people who will just come in and just be like, impress me, give me your best idea. I'll listen to it. Maybe I'll listen to someone else tomorrow. Maybe I'll come back to you if you have a better idea. But he really does play the role so perfectly. And it's just to a point where I really, in those scenes, do not want to take my eyes off the screen because it's just that compelling.
It's been a brilliant ad. You know, you always need that person. You know, another show that I have to compare, and I'm comparing it to the best elements of this, okay? Because it's not a perfect show, but Billions would have that new character that comes in per season that's going to be the, you know, is he good, is he bad? Had that opulence, had the score, had the forward momentum, you know, intriguing characters that are developing and power dynamics that are changing and someone's up, someone's down. But it's just a dash of it. You know, it's a little bit of a dash of it, and it doesn't have the over the top corniness that drags Billions down in my
you know, in my estimation. But I feel like Jesse Bloom is a character that absolutely could walk into season 7 of Billions.
He could walk into a lot of different shows. I mean, there was a there's a very interesting show that was on HBO for like 2 seasons. Maybe it was even like 1.5 seasons, called How to Make It in America. I think I'm maybe the only person in the world who watched this show. But it was like a group of like gritty young kids in New York trying to make it in a like an apparel in the apparel industry, the fashion industry. And it was like an amazing show. I don't remember much of it because it was that long ago, but it had that also kind of gritty, like, you know, bringing in that those elements of just like grittiness and just young people trying to make it. And it's just, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of good comps, and it's like, feels like this show really does bring in the best of a lot of different, the best of a lot of the best of different other shows. If that makes sense at all.
And of course it's maintained that handheld style, makes you feel like you're on the floor. The wide audio mic. One of the things I've really noticed in the writing of industry is that a lot of the jokes are the second people talking on the floor in the background. Mm-hmm. You can absolutely hear what they're saying, even though you're focused on Harper and DVD over here. You know, Rishi is over in the corner and he's on some crazy rant, and you kind of, especially if you have the subtitles on, you're like, you're hearing it in the background. It's like, it's always hilarious.
It's Arrested Development.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Look at all the great shows that we are bringing up. Hopefully, you know, Mickey Downs, Conrad K, if you've tuned in, we're only comparing your show to
like really good other shows.
Incredible stuff. Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of incredible, Mahala Harold, who plays Harper, you know, we were just blown away by her performance in year one. And I think she continues. She is a really, really impressive nonverbal actor. She has so much she can express through her eyes, through just her facial expression. She's very physical, obviously, in what she does in many situations through the course of the show, and just truly continues to be on an upward trajectory through this show.
Yeah, I'm actually really interested. Not that I want industry to end, but I'm actually really interested to see where she lands after something like this, because she is such a compelling character as a person who can't really hide my emotions. My husband often says I wear my emotions on my sleeve. I'm very easy to read. And it's like, I love that about her. I love that it's just like she can act through those scenes where it's like she doesn't have to use, you know, a script. It's just emotions and eyes and the facial expressions, and just, I mean, I'm like a chronic eye roller myself. So just using those situations, and it's really interesting to watch her play this character, which is like a young person really trying to navigate in the world. And I've said that already, but it's interesting with her because I'm really fascinated to see where this goes from, and we'll get to this, of course, but like where we are in the show right now in terms of just like, is she going to be a person who eventually uses that brilliance to succeed, or is she going to just continue to kind of fail up, for lack of a better way to say it, just hitch her wagon to the next person who's willing to give her a lifeboat. And so I'm fascinated to see where that goes.
Well, paraphrasing, because I think it was back to maybe episode 2, where Rob is talking, I think, to Yasmin about Harper. And this, you know, there's kind of like the castaway, like, you know, Harper, she's so great or she's so brilliant. And his response, again, paraphrasing, is she, or does she just never take her foot off the gas?
Mm-hmm. And there are people like that. There are people there. I was, you know, it's funny. I'm going to make a confession on your podcast, because it's nothing anyone will care about. When I was in law school, people often thought I was in the top 10%. The top 10% is like this magical thing in law school, where if you're in that top 10%, you're viewed as like the best of the best in your law school class. And everyone was always shocked to find out I was not in the top 10%. And they were like, how are you not in the top 10%? You're every professor's favorite. You do well on everything. You speak up in class. You do all the right things. And I'm just like, I just act like it.
Yeah.
And there's something to, in I think most industries, about just acting like you belong there. And that's something that I feel like Harper does really well throughout this series. And she's just like, if I just act hard enough, like I belong here, it doesn't matter if I'm actually brilliant or not. People will just view me as brilliant. And that's one way to succeed in a career until you get caught sometimes, which is maybe where we are.
Yes. You know, and she discusses it. Episode 5 was just an absolutely incredible episode of this show, which has been, and I'm going to get to back to another Succession drop again, like is dropping bangers, just like boom, boom, in the middle of the season, taking the show to new heights, utilizing in Succession style, the like, we've got to go on a trip, you know, and these characters need to be on the trip. And this is where we're going to find a discovery on this trip. And in that, talking to Yasmin, she said that she loves the job because she loves living in the present mm-hmm. and having that ultimate scoreboard, essentially, of have you made the money? Haven't you? What, did this trade succeed? Did it fail? She's ruthless in mm-hmm. her pursuit of success. She's like a shark. And when we see in season one how she leverages her relationship with Eric, her mentor, the fact that by episode 3, she has completely kneecapped Eric and essentially ended his career with a backstab is kind of like, yeah, you needed to see that coming if you're working with Harper, because this is who Harper is.
Yeah. And it's really funny to see stuff like that, because I feel like we've all known people like that in our careers where they're just like, they're going to walk in and they're going to get what they want, and they're going to do it in a way that's maybe not the most ethical, maybe not the way that you would do it as a person. Like personally, I'm like really, I have a reputation in my job for being a very nice person and a very easy person to work with. And that's not how I run my business, but there are people, you know, like I said, I do work in wealth management, and there are people who I work with who are fucking ruthless, and they get what they want, whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing. And I was told this by one of my mentors in my current job. And I walked into his office one day and I was almost in tears. And I was like, this guy is just yelling at me. He's not, it's like, I'm right. I know I'm right. Like he's saying like, we need to do it this way. And he just kind of shook his head and he's like, Rebecca, he's like, I don't know what to tell you. He's like, you're right. But the reason they're so successful is because they're like this. And it's one of those just like kind of brutal facts about some professions where it's like people can be ruthless and not kind. And that's like, that's not what I teach my kid. I teach my kid be kind. And you know, that's the way you get through the world. And there are just some professions still where you can be ruthless and that's how you get ahead. And this is what we see her kind of adopting that male mentality, not to be, you know, sexist about it, but it is kind of a male mentality of be ruthless. Don't be soft. Don't be feminine. You be ruthless. And that's how you get ahead. And so I'll be interested to see how far that serves her.
And you know, that kind of dovetails off the discussion we had, you know, back in 2020, but about, you know, the final decisions that Harper made at the end of season one and how it's so many times cast and cast through the eyes of that season one character, Daria, back then. It's like, how could you, how dare you, essentially, you know, what happened to me too, again, like deeply, deeply paraphrasing, but she mm-hmm. was in it for her and she saw where the opportunity was for her within that, not for the collective, not for the better good of womanhood, for Harper Stern. And
right.
What I love about, again, what we've seen this season is that one of the things I think we both agreed that industry did well was they would put little details in, but they didn't give you everything in season one. Right. You just needed to know that Harper was not from a prestigious university, that she faked or had some bad, you know, test scores that, you know, she had to hide from along the way while she was, you know, digging her way into the industry. Season two gives you the opportunity to get some of that backstory. And it comes in episode 5 when she finds her brother working in Berlin as a line cook, and doing dishes. And then in like 20 minutes, they give us this really well done and powerful family portrayal, Rebecca, of a young tennis pro that would hit her brother that was driven to just quit when he was an up and coming player, walk off, disappear. And part of that stress is what led Harper to fail in her huge exam that, yeah, you know, led to some of the season one drama. But we find out that she, and then we see it in episode six when she's trying to push Jesse Bloom. She is that person trying to whip you into that performance, trying to push and shame you to be your best.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where you just really don't ever know when you're in a professional environment what the other person is going through. And this is one of the things I've been taught in my career is to, like, you know, maintain a professional distance. But I think that's something that's starting to become less and less of a thing as, you know, you really want to get to know your colleagues. And, you know, I care if someone I'm working closely with is going through some shit. And I think that's a thing where in some industries and to a certain extent, this one, at least in the context of what Harper's job is, it's just don't bring your personal life to work. We don't give a fuck like what you are dealing with. And some of that is just to be around that kind of success as a child and, you know, be so subsumed by it and feel like you need to prove yourself in the world. And, you know, that's something that as a person who has always been driven by success, I feel a little bit, but it's just really interesting to finally hear that backstory with her and see that, like, she's ruthless for a reason because she has to be seen.
Yes, absolutely. She's running her positive forward momentum. Isn't just that she's a shark that can only go forward. She's got things she's trying to go away from as well. And that's been revealed. And if she slows down, that's going to catch up to her in a sense. And so I just felt like so much was filled in there for the Harper character to, once again, you don't necessarily have to like her.
No.
You know, but to understand, you know, who she is, where she's coming from. To that extent, Yasmin and her creepy ass dad sitting there meeting, you know, with her and her boss, Celeste, and it, you know, in weird track suits with a chub, you know, just like literally disgusting. Like, first thing he says to his daughter, "You look so fabulous," you know, like, and then again in episode five, you've got Yasmin going to find her nanny that she loved that helped raise her in this lush apartment. Turns out she's got a half sister, you know, right there. You know, that was out of wedlock. I think the name of that, or it was the episode before, was what, There Were Some Women.
Yes. It's such a good episode name.
And there's one of them. There's another one of them in it. And so then when you see that Yasmin is so lost and that she is seeking, when she finds it, a figure like Celeste, her new boss, who combines that older figure, because Yasmin's mom hates her. Yasmin's mom won't talk to her.
Right.
Yasmin's dad's attracted to her in some Trumpian creepy way. And then what do we see? First day at work, first lunch break, Yasmin and Celeste, they're in bed. Like, this is how messed up her boundaries
worldview is.
Are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's an argument to be made for at a certain point, everyone needs some therapy. I mean, it's an interesting, to bring up Succession again, it's like kind of an interesting nod to Succession and to some extent Mad Men, where it's like, you know, you need to find these figures in your life who will fill that void when you don't have that. And so, you know, when you don't have parents who were there, or you don't have a mentor in your career or a parent who can guide you in that way, then you have to go find those people in the world. And, you know, sometimes you find them and sometimes you don't. And sometimes you just find someone who's just like willing to use you in a way that suits them. And, you know, that is kind of a nod to the Me Too stuff of just women empowerment and, you know, women trying to find their way in male dominated industries. I think Celeste is actually a really interesting example of someone who has arguably succeeded in that space. But, you know, then you see how she acts with Yasmin and it's like, did she succeed because she used her femininity and used being a woman to succeed in that way? Or did she just succeed because she was just like the men? Once again, kind of the nod to what Harper did in season one. So it's really interesting. And, you know, I'm curious to see if they're going to stick with this, you know, Yasmin in private wealth management storyline, or if she's going to make her way back to kind of the main characters where they are in their trading floor.
Yeah. Two episodes to find out. And I definitely think industry is going to go off the rails in these two episodes in terms of how much stuff is going to happen. So I can't wait to find out myself. Now, season one's most famous actor, of course, was Ken Leung playing Eric. And we encounter this man who appears to be at the top of the industry, but is actually kind of just barely hanging on to his role, to his prestige, to his worldview, to his feeling of the way things used to be. And it has been fascinating. And he's kind of been a character for the beginning of the season. And now it looks like it's going to be the end of the season as well. But we're seeing this character that we met after his rise.
Yes.
Going through his fall and having as his foil, again, one of my favorite new characters, DVD, Danny Vandeventer, who is from Pierpoint, New York, has come to London. They're going to the desk, you know, Eric's desk and the desk in New York, you know, the London desk, the New York desk, that's going to become one desk. Where's it going to be? That's the beginning drama. We find out right away, like, London's screwed. Everyone's going to New York. I like that they didn't make that like a plot point. Right.
Yeah.
But the nature of Eric, who's always been that guy that, like, how does he succeed being so rough and so coarse in everything he does? Well, here comes DVD, the ultimate company man, slick, handsome, you know, sympathetic, you know, a little bit of empathy, but always with a cold, cold undercurrent of, you know, rising, you know, always climbing within the structure. And I have found that interplay and actually making DVD not a one note character, right? But mm-hmm. actually a character that's very 3D DVD. I have found that to be one of my favorite dynamics of the season.
Yeah, he's such an interesting character just from a couple of different perspectives. Like, you know, it's he kind of comes in as the counterpoint to Eric, right? He's the sympathetic, you know, let's work together, let's mentor, let's problem solve. And like in theory, that's everything you want from a boss, is someone who will actually listen to you and mentor you and support you, you know, unlike the relationship between, you know, Harper and Eric, which was very like, it was mentor, but it was very like, you know, pushing someone to do something and pushing someone and molding them in your own image. And this is very much more like he's coming in as the collaborative, like, you know, I'm just going to be like the nice boss, the, you know, person who, you know, is going to be reasonable and help you. And it's interesting how he walks into a culture that just kind of rejects all that. It's he's trying so hard to make them into this culture, and they've already been kind of hardened by this other culture that's, you know, kind of leaving out the door. So I don't know. I like him as a character. It's interesting. And it's really interesting to see how he leans into that sympathy so hard that, you know, he basically ends up in bed with Harper, but then he does have to turn around and be the hard ass boss when she messes up. And it's such a hard dynamic, and it's an interesting dynamic. It's, you know, it's always like why they say don't sleep with your coworkers, because then it just gets really complicated.
And by the way, DVD is played by Alex Alomar Akpobome, or AAA. So AAA as DVD. But I thought impeccable casting. He just,
yes.
he's hot enough to fit the profile. He's smart enough. He's got that gentleness. He's got the gentleness in his eyes. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was impeccable casting. And is he the most rootable character so far? He's obviously got his own thing going on too. He's so pragmatic.
Yeah. But he's kind of boring. I mean, in the sense that, I mean, and that's fine. Personally, I am a boring person. I like boring people. I'm one of them. But, you know, in terms of just like people who grab the screen, I don't think he's it for me. Although, I mean, for looks, for sure. But, you know, it's he's got some depth and he's got some interesting plot points. I don't know if I would call him rootable necessarily, because it's like, you do have that back and forth with every character. And I did like him when he was kind of like, okay, mentoring Harper and trying to kind of turn her back around. It's like, soften up a little bit. Let me show you how to do this the right way. Like, you've been kind of, you know, trained wrong, and I think I can bring that around. But then having to be ruthless with her later. And it's like, did I want that to succeed? Did I finally have a relationship that I wanted to succeed? And then it was just like, oh no, well, you know, they went and messed that up. So I don't know. It's just the character development in this season is just very divine for me. It's like even the smallest characters are getting just enough development so that you, like, in some situations you're rooting for them, in some situations you're rooting against them. And that's kind of part of the beauty of this season.
Well, and as we mentioned, there's always that undercurrent of class in this show, in industry. And one of the moments I thought that was so beautifully illustrative of that was when Rob was sent to go impress a recruit, yes, at Oxford, and brought, you know, this year's class recruit with him. But DVD is talking at the office about sending him to Oxford. And like, the only thing DVD can even think about as a reference to Oxford is Harry Potter. Like, he just, you know, like, he has no frame of reference. Whereas for Rob, like, all of this history and tradition and all family, you know, it's legacy over his head, and all of this is all built into just even walking onto Oxford. And I just love, like I said, it's kind of a transition, that dichotomy, because maybe Rob's the rootable character on this show, at least for a guy who's got heart and is definitely trying to find his way.
He probably is. I mean, that's where, for me, probably he is the most rootable character, just because it's interesting the comp you just made, because I feel like for me, that was kind of a not ignorant Americans a little bit. But no, he's just such a likable guy. I mean, he tries so hard. He just kind of fails a lot, but it's okay. It's like, you know, it's like the dumb, you know, neighbor or something like that. He just, like, kind of sometimes want to root for, but, you know, it's he doesn't have, I feel like, the depth of a lot of the more main characters. But I mean, that's by design. He's a side character, but it's, you know, he really is kind of like, I don't really find anything, like, terrible about him. He's just kind of like, just, you know, like, bless his heart.
Yeah, waking up drunk and, you know, in his own spit and whatnot outside his dad's house, you know, after an overnight bender. And of course, when we meet him at the start of season two, in season one, he's Mr. Party, Mr. Sex, you know, Mr. Young and on the run. And you've got this sobriety to him at the beginning of the year, which, of course, once he walks into his dad's pub, lasts like 35 seconds. Mm-hmm. He's got a bottle of champagne. You can see the power of his father over him. But that humility that he brings, and with his client that he's working with, where the way that it works is for him to just say, I don't know what I'm doing. I need your help.
Yeah. And sometimes that's, you know, I have one of my mentors in my career once told me that when you walk into a room, something you need to always remember is that you generally know more than the client. And then the other thing she taught me is that no is an okay answer, or I don't know, I'll get back to you is a totally okay answer. And there's a little bit of a nod to that, in that, like, you know, listen, like, I don't know the answer to your question, but I'll get back to you is something that I have used a lot in my career. And especially in, you know, an industry like this one, it's a really powerful answer to just say, like, hey, don't pretend to know. I don't know, and I can research it and get back to you is a totally fine answer. And I think there's some of, you know, him trying to learn that the hard way.
Yeah, I'm pulling for Rob. Rob's lost his mojo. Sad thing is, like, people think he did okay when he got completely drunk, you know, and went hardball times five with a new client, you know, and DVD the next day is like, hey, good work, man. You know, and it's that sadness of, like, oh, this is how I'm going to succeed, is by being the worst version of myself. The version I'm trying so hard not to be, you know, perfect Shakespearean tragic character.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe you figure that out at some point, maybe you don't, but it's, you know, it's part of the beauty of being young in some ways. The beauty and the tragedy of being young is learning what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And maybe, you know, 2 years from now in season three, he realizes this doesn't work for him and it never was going to work for him. Or maybe he doesn't and he's still struggling through a career that he hates. And there are people like that in the world too.
Yeah. You know, speaking of another kind of second, well, this isn't even a secondary, it's a tertiary character, but I got to get him in here because it's speaking back to Yasmin, right? Yasmin comes from inherited wealth, old money, extreme privilege. Mm-hmm. When we see her in the season premiere of season two, she's like bragging to people. Yeah. I went to 4 known super spreader events, you know, and I never got sick. Like she's been living a world of no consequence. And when we saw her start to party in season one, by the time it's season two, she's that person by herself doing bumps, like in the middle of the day, just to keep her equilibrium wherever she thinks she needs it. And in season one, one of Yasmin's key foils is her leader on her desk, Kenny, played by Connor McNeil, who is just kind of generally a shit.
Yeah.
In season one, and is, you know, a drunken lout, and is kind of a basic character. Mm-hmm. And this again is where I kind of feel like our co-creators, Downs and Kay, just did such a great job of bringing this character back, which they didn't have to. They could have completely left him out of the season, but using him not only to give depth, and episode 6, just from the dance to the tearful apology, really, really well acted. But to me, Rebecca, Kenny is being used as a mirror for Yasmin, one that she's kind of not willing to look at. And that's why she's so mean to him, just so awful to him through the course of the season so far, I think, is because he is consequence. You know, he did like less than her, and he's going through all the consequence, and she's been doing more than that and experiencing none of it. But looking at him makes her confront that, at least in her mind.
Yeah. And just an example of someone who, you know, to the point of being in a career that you're maybe kind of unfulfilled by, like he really does seem like he's just kind of there because he, you know, has been there forever and is collecting a paycheck. And, you know, this is where you could end up if you don't, you know, work harder to find, I mean, I'm reading a lot into this, but work harder to find some meaning in your career, as opposed to just, you know, partying it up and, you know, using your privilege. It's just, you know, finding that place where you're actually fulfilled by your career. And he's obviously someone who, at least to me, maybe not obviously, but to me, someone who's just like, just here because this is where he's always been. And, you know, there's always that person in every job, I feel like, who's just been there forever and you still don't really know why they're there.
Yeah.
That's what he is kind of for me.
And then our last guy on the menu is kind of the opposite of that, right? Gus knows where he's supposed to be, but he doesn't want to be there.
Right.
And, you know, he's got a wealthy family. He comes, while he's a black character on the show, he's someone who comes from nothing but wealth, nothing but privilege, nothing but old custom. And here he is dabbling in a Tory regional office, you know, as a liaison to the public and finding meaning, finding connection. Sure, he's messing around with Jesse Bloom's son and is ostensibly his mentor. And I feel like that's very written into the show just to give him something to do.
Yeah.
But the politics side, I've at least, well, I definitely think this is my F of ABCDEF plots on the show. Mm-hmm. I have enjoyed how they've explored that contrast between what you want to do versus what you're expected to do. And especially for him, who was perceived to be such a social climber and such kind of a slimy, moving type dude. I've enjoyed seeing that turn in season two.
Yeah. And it's I really do see a lot of my, I don't want to say I see a lot of myself in that, but there was a point in my own career where I transitioned from being a practicing attorney to working in nonprofit. And it was a big shift for me. It was, you know, using some of the same skills, but it was a definite shift in from in going from a world where I was viewed as having a very prestigious career to a world in which everyone assumed my salary was basically nothing. And, you know, the reality wasn't quite that, but it was a shift that made my career trajectory very fulfilling. And I do love the counterbalance of, you know, here's someone who realized that this was not for him. And I feel like at least half of the characters who are still at Pierpoint, like, this is still not for them, but they just have not figured that out yet because they're still stuck with trying to make this work because they're, you know, come from money and that's what they're expected to do, or they feel the need to prove themselves because they didn't come from money and they've made it this far already. And, you know, the reality at a certain point is that there's really no shame in admitting that, like, you need to start over somewhere. And I love that plot with Gus just for that reason, is, you know, you can start over and you can be happier and you don't need to be snorting coke at a rave to do that.
Yeah. All right. So let's wrap up with some rampant speculation.
Sure.
We both obviously love this show to death and love the direction it's gone and could talk about each one of these characters, you know, like it's our friend at the bar for 20 or 30 minutes.
Yes.
And continue to dive in. Episode 6 ends with Harper really messing up. I mean, really stepping in it, being caught red-handed by DVD, ruining Rishi's year financially, basically screwing her own company to benefit her client, and being told by DVD to get off the floor, and, you know, that it's going upstairs, the whole thing's going upstairs. Well, who goes upstairs? Harper goes upstairs to find Eric's office. And I'm going to bend it all the way back to your first comparison on the podcast tonight when you brought up Mad Men, because there's a perfect Mad Men homage in the final 3 seconds of episode 6 where he says, close the door, have a seat. Here we go.
Yep. And it's great. It's, I mean, I'm so interested to see where this goes for so many reasons, because it is such a fun Mad Men comp, right? It's, I mean, it's Don and Peggy. But it's more interesting. I mean, so in addition to, like, my current career trajectory, having me in, I'm not actually a wealth manager, but I work in a wealth management office where I do something that's adjacent to that. And I grew up with my dad having a career in wealth management as well. And so I still remember, it's a fun story, actually. My dad changed firms one day. And when you change firms in wealth management, it's very controversial, generally, especially if you're a big producer, which my dad necessarily wasn't. But we went and stole all of his client files on Christmas morning. He had me, like, in his office in La Jolla, where he had me standing by the elevator. It's like 9 a.m. on Christmas morning when he's, like, getting all his shit out of his office. And he's like, if anyone shows up, I'm like, it's Christmas. Nobody's going to be here. He's like, you never know. So it's really, to change firms like that, or to plot to change firms like that, is a very big deal. And I, just from a professional perspective, am interested to see how this plays out. And then from the perspective of, these are two characters who are, like, potentially actually bad at their jobs.
Yes.
Where do they think they're going to go unless they can actually sell themselves as better than they actually are? Which, I mean, so far they've been able to do that potentially. So I'll be very interested to see where that goes.
Yeah, I'm going to need at least a little bit of convincing if Jesse Bloom is going to move mountains to make sure that Harper and Eric are whole wherever they go. And that's kind of like that he can king make and say, no, you know, you can go to Goldman Sachs, which is what she's saying to him on the phone. Right.
Yeah.
Which DVD is listening in on, like, I'm going to handle your coverage, whether I'm here, there, or anywhere, I'm going to be your person. And he's like, well, if you pull this off, you know, then we can talk again. But did she pull it off? She didn't really, right?
No. And so that's where it's going to be interesting to see if the Jesse Bloom plot continues, or, you know, in terms of him following him, her, in terms of him following her somewhere, if she lands somewhere else, because that is a thing. I mean, wealth management firms do recruit people who can bring a big client kind of regardless of whether they're good or not, because they want that client. So right. I will be very interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated. And I feel like last one, I swear, much like Succession, here comes this power play, you know, like when the kids were all scheming up and, you know, heading out to the villa, and we're going to take the company from dad and we're going to show him. And sometimes these plays don't work.
Yeah.
Sometimes you wind up holding the bag. And I could see an episode 8 of season 2 that ends with Harper and Eric sharing a cigarette in the rain, and that's all they've got between the two of them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, or it could be that they're standing on top of the world and the rest of Pierpoint is just looking at them going like, how the fuck did they do that? So it's going to be interesting to see how those last two episodes play out.
Oh, two more to go. Well, I'm sure we will at least reconvene for a segment for whatever shocking, amazing, techno-driven, bubbly, exciting, propulsive, fascinating, layered stuff happens in the final two episodes. But that would be about 3 weeks from now on this feed. But Rebecca, thank you so much. What a great conversation. And again, you know, with so many of these shows, and as regular Crossing Streams listeners know, I don't put a show on a ranking until the season's over. But gosh darn it, because I've had like 8 number one shows this year, and Industry is kind of my favorite show this year.
Is anyone else talking about this show either? Because I feel like you and I are maybe the only people watching it.
There's been some, you know, the Ringer Prestige TV podcast feed has put out kind of a bi-weekly check-in. There's some buzz happening. I've heard industry meaning like Hollywood industry people saying that this is their show, you know, that they're into right now. But I do think it's kind of an undug field, you know, to some extent. And so that makes it even cooler, because this is a boutique show that you can say that you liked before it became the most popular thing around. I've really enjoyed the Euphoria meets Succession kind of comp that's been for where we are here for season 2 of Industry. But I'm telling you, there's no way this show is outside my top 10. And this is going to be the most loaded top 10 in the history of Crossing Streams, the 5th ranking. And I cannot imagine a world where this isn't one of the 10 best shows.
Well, I'll be interested to see where it lands for you.
Well, Rebecca, incredible stuff. Thank you. Staying up a little late here for us old bodies, at least me, on a Wednesday evening. We appreciate it. Again, we'll catch up in a couple weeks when this thing's over.
You got it. Sounds good.
Awesome. Episode 197 will be coming your way just a couple of days from now. If you're listening on Thursday, maybe a day from now, as it's going to be another edition of Talk Nerdy to Me with Ken Garten. And we are diving into Lord of the Rings. Already, Ryan Phillips and I are covering House of the Dragon. But wait, more high fantasy worth hundreds of millions of dollars. So Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. We're talking about that. And we're talking about The Sandman on episode 197 on Netflix. Yet another, and I know I'm sounding like just, you know, Mr. Happy Positive, I love everything, but another show I really love, The Sandman on Netflix, which is just incredibly done and probably the best fantasy that's happened so far this year. So we're talking Lord of the Rings, we're talking Sandman. That's episode 197. This has been episode 196. For Rebecca Gennaro, I'm Craig Elston. Thanks for getting to the end. We appreciate you. Talk to you soon right here on Crossing Streams.